I remember conversations back in 2019, 2020, where people tell me that they've got more people in that team than Poly had, and they're going to build it all. They have the resources, they have the data. And that was AI washing. Right? That was complete AI washing, because those people have, for the most part, fired most of those teams now because the effort didn't amount to much.
Hello, welcome. It's Deep Learning with Poly AI, and it's a new episode. I'm here with Nikola Mirchik, CEO and co-founder of Poly AI. Hey, Nikola.
Hey, Damon. How's it going?
Not too bad. I am in beautiful, sunny Florida, wrapping up a nice little conference. How about yourself?
Your voice sounds like you've been socializing.
Oh, yeah. I think it's part of the mandate. When you're on a beachside conference, you have to go out and just kick back a couple Mai Tais. So thank you for noticing. I hope maybe we tap into a whole new audience with this kind of scratchy voice.
Yeah, that's good. I mean, I'd rotate my computer if I didn't fear the whole recording setup at all. But we just moved to our new office in the city of London. It is as gray as you'd expect. So I envy you.
Oh, okay. Well, enjoy the new digs. I'll bring back some of the beach next time I'm there.
That's true.
Anyway, well, so today's topic, wanted to get into this concept that's flitting around in headlines. It's called AI washing, and it's essentially a modern take on greenwashing, where companies historically, back in the eco craze of being responsible to our home planet here, would overinflate the level of investment resources that they were putting towards reducing their carbon footprint and light. So basically putting up a show that says, hey, we're taking care of our planet. Now, with AI being ubiquitous with modern technology, everyone wants to say that they have something going on or something AI in their roster. And so this phenomenon of AI washing is coming to be. So based on your understanding
want to use more AI or less AI, right? Because there's concern of AI will destroy us and we'll be uploaded when we're not. And then there's the whole other piece. Are you innovative enough? Are you using AI? When you say greenwashing, I almost think that it's people claiming not to use it when they are.
Well, I would say that's a counter AI movement. The AI washers are the ones that are like, hey, kids, we're cool. We're hip. We're also AI powered. Check out our AI. And they have no idea what they're talking about. But it turns out it was a tool and like building some new solution, but really not a part of their functional product itself. Now, obviously, we at Poly AI, you guys back in the Cambridge days, built your own language models. We built a product around this thing that ended up being the conversational AI. And we have a lot of deployments using generative as well. AI is, it's not just our name, it's part of our core fiber, right? But a lot of companies out there aren't doing that. Maybe let's just start with AI as a concept. Right now, a lot of consumers, a lot of people who are late to the idea, they're probably thinking of generative, right? Because their first introduction to AI in its modern concept is like ChatGPT. So what is artificial intelligence? What is AI as a general construct? And how long has it really been around?
Yeah, I'm sure we've done this in a podcast before, right? But it's
irresponsible if we didn't.
AI has a concept, or it's been around for a while, right? Like, it's really hard to look at a place where it exactly starts. Like, you had this famous Dartmouth conference in AI in 1966, where a bunch of professors gathered either for 2 weeks from the summer to solve AI. It was great, very ambitious. Unfortunately, they weren't as productive as they had hoped. So we're still at it, right? The early days of AI were mostly about non-statistical approaches. It was people trying to, like, the fascination has, at the start and to this day, been very much about like games, like chess and other ones. Like,
sure,
you have a system that is intelligent by showing that it can best a human, best, right? Like DeepFlu versus Kasparov, and AlphaGo more recently. And that's all fine. Those systems are, well, Deep Blue was mostly a symbolic system, right? So it wasn't learning from patterns and trying to generalize knowledge from, like, say, reinforcement learning. It was really much more about people writing a bunch of good algorithms for, like, they're basically creating a bot that can play you, and they're encoding these rules that should hopefully give it the right next action in a complex space. It helped, not to get too mathematical, but chess, Go, and similar games were good because they were these discrete systems that were fully visible and you could find what the next action is. The action space is an important concept, which is what do you do next, right? Do you have one of X moves? Because if you do, then over time you can learn which one is best and hopefully you recognize familiar and unfamiliar situations. And then for a while, people really focused on those things. And after some time, it kind of like, it didn't really garner all that excitement, because how many decades can you work on a better chess player before people stop believing that you're about to create an AI that will be like omnipresent and used for absolutely everything and whatnot. You had a few starts in what is considered more narrowly machine learning, which is really using statistics to work on a problem, to do a task of a particular kind, right? It could be image recognition, it could be facial recognition, it could be speech recognition, like all sorts of things that are maybe assistive things for humans, all the way to like full end-to-end task completion of, I don't know, a bot that does something that you would have otherwise had to do on your computer for 5 minutes. And like machine learning really took off a few times, and neural network approaches had a few kind of different phases. In the 90s, people showed that the multi-layer perceptron could do some stuff, but it really wasn't even that competitive compared to other statistical approaches, like, I don't know, a random forest or other classification approaches. And then really 2012 onwards, we entered the era of deep learning, and it hasn't really stopped since, where through various different optimization methods, we got to the point that these systems became state of the art for a vast number of different tasks, and performance improved. And we got more and more confidence that the whole thing has a future and can do some things better than a human, right? And that all kept progressing, and we were all excited, right? That's the era where I started my PhD, 2014, and that was like 2 years, a year and a half after some of the first seminal papers on deep learning came about, mostly Jeff Hinton's paper.
Okay.
But then you basically, the final flip is LLMs showing that model that is fairly generic can actually do far more than we ever initially expected it would do. It was built to predict the next word, right? And to tell you which sentence is more likely than another sentence by looking at the perplexity, like the collection of words. How likely are these words to go together? But taken to an extreme and consuming all the data, and then there's a bunch of other tricks in training and creating synthetic data sets where they see examples of how tasks are to be performed, how questions can be answered and stuff like that. That's where then you get to an interesting point where they start generalizing in ways that you did not necessarily, you hope that they would pick it up from data, but you didn't explicitly give them a mechanism. They inferred it themselves. And that's the point where I think usually
is that the progression? Because like you said, going back to the early foundational applications of AI, it was around games because it was a very finite data set. It's sitting in a narrow space, like with Go and chess. But now with natural increase in computing power and access to information, that was the expected evolution to what we see today.
I think what's interesting is that we all expected that these things would get better, but these like emerging properties, like the ability to generalize that well, I think people hoped for it. And then for a while, it wasn't really happening. Then we had a few people like Ilya Sutskever who believed that they would do far more, like that there would be a moment where the increase in capacity would not just be like some thing that follows mathematically the amount of data, but gets to a level of capability of something that you did not intend. And that's how it runs. And that's why we're obsessed with them right now, because it really feels like something unexpected happened. Like, it's like the GPT 3.5 is really a bit of a, like an Oppenheimer moment, right? Where like Trinity test, the world is now different, right? We have a singular system that by consuming all this data has become capable of being this almost utility function for development that can do so much more, right? And now creativity is exploited and people claim that, well, they're trying to do all sorts of fascinating things. So I think that's where the whole stuff around AI washing is interesting, because I think we've compared it to, at least if you look at the life of a CIO, like this moment is similar, except now even the CEO is far more interested, right? To the moment where cloud computing came to be, and those first came like the dominant companies because they had the versatility and ability to do far more and to use other services and applications, and they could pivot much faster than someone who had servers that people deploying software off of like CDs onto those servers. There was a moment where people bet on it, and then the conservative ones said, hey, safety is going to be an issue. All of like safety, a different kind of safety, more like cybersecurity.
Right.
But those that like made the bets profited generously, and others are still talking about how they're navigating their transition to the cloud. So I think like having seen that
cloud washing had its moment, then it seems.
I don't think so. I think it wasn't seen as immediately as beneficial. Now it is. And like hindsight 2020, right? I think with AI, because people don't want to miss another moment in the evolution of technology like this, everyone almost wants to like pump themselves up and say, hey, I'm actually doing a lot with AI. What are you doing with AI?
Right.
And that's really where now we're just like in the peak of the current hype cycle, where like people can do no wrong when they try AI initiatives. What they're actually doing, and it may be just that they don't want to look stupid in front of their friends.
But that's the thing, is that, first of all, this is a longstanding concept. It's going into a massive evolution with generative's capabilities. All the big tech companies are creating their own LLMs. It's something where you and I, as well, not a lot more about this stuff, but me as a consumer, I'm like, wow, this must be important technology if it's literally what every single big tech company is putting out and touting as far as their entrance, their player in the big overarching consumer tech race. So again, this goes back to when people conceptualize AI, their thought is, oh, it's that ChatGPT thing. So they're talking about generative AI. And when companies say, hey, we're AI powered, a lot of times it is that open source LLM that is just doing something and they put their wrapper on it. And that, like you said, it was, they gave it a UX, right? And then tried to brand it as a product, but it is, it's really, it's a data set, it's a tool. So I understand the nature of why companies would want to AI wash, right? It's like tapping into the zeitgeist. Everyone's talking about it anyway. So let's try and find a way to put it into the fold. Where is the line between actually utilizing artificial intelligence in product solutions, in delivering services, versus it's just a functional tool, but it's not actually powering the end result?
It depends. I think that like people would try to build all sorts of things, like whether you've got like a friend of mine likes to say that C3 AI probably has a much larger market cap just because they got the ticker and people want to buy AI, right? So you're going to buy right?
Even though they're not That's really much in their company.
Really, I don't think it matters, frankly, because the products that are powered with the right kind of architecture and the right kind of model, I think now we're talking just about like very tactical bets. Right. It's
right.
As old as any other software iteration, right? Where some people want to build it all themselves. Some people will buy packaged products from others. Some people will buy configurable platforms. And some people will want to build their own LLM and then build on top. I think it's really just what are your actual problems and like where is the right place to start? And people have done, at least in our space, people have done absolutely everything already. I have clients and prospects that have done everything from get a voice assistant from us, all the way to try to build their own and work with us with our template systems, all the way to people who have such well-funded teams that they're training their own models. They're going to do it all themselves. And by and large, you know, I've been at it for a while now. I remember conversations back in 2019, 2020, where people tell me that they've got more people in that team than Polly had, and they're going to build it all. They have the resources, they have the data. And that was AI washing. That was complete AI washing because those people have, for the most part, fired most of those teams now because the effort didn't amount to much. Now, of course, the technology is more powerful now, so you can do more with less. I think the interesting bit is, I don't know if this falls under your AI washing bit, but it's, people see a demo, they get excited, they give a presentation to the wider company about like how they're using generative AI. And long before you're off to the race, build something where you don't know how to productize it fully, how to package it up, how to feed analytics from it, how to create the right safety conditions, and then you might be in trouble, right? So we'll see what the right approach is for the different application areas where people are using generative AI. And like there will be winners and there'll be losers. I don't think that the collective wave will disappoint. I think there might be people disappointed when, as a bank, they start training their own LLM and 2 years later, they've done what five foundational startups have the resources to do and chips, the data, the whole infrastructure around it, right? So like those guys are probably disappointed, right? They may or may not admit that to themselves because they probably won't, like a bank building its own LLM will not build something comparable to OpenAI or Anthropic or Mistral.
Right.
Others, right. But I think that those using LLMs to power products will achieve efficiencies, right? Now, I think it really depends on who you're buying it from, what you're buying. Are you buying it because it told you to buy AI? In which case you may not do that well. Or do you have a business problem that you're solving from and then you look at, okay, what am I actually doing? So I spoke to a prospect recently and they're doing everything from chat automation to assistive tools with generative. And we've all seen co-pilot demos, right? So that's very interesting. If you need to make a slide and you go, look at this presentation. Now create a summarization slide. Oh no, wait, turn that into a table. That's fantastic. That's like making so many investment banking analysts redundant, because a lot of sleepless nights will be solved with one prompt into GPT, right? But if we're talking about like a live problem, say you're a contact center agent, you're at your job, and you've been asked a question, you don't know the answer to. Like either the answer shows up in front of you straight away and you start reading it, or more likely, right? Like it takes a bit of time for it to show up. You're mumbling in the meantime. You're reading the
right
to understand. You're panicking. You started saying one thing, then you see another.
What's up?
Listening to you. I mean, I've seen this, right? Like the system is listening to you. And it starts listening to what you said. That feeds prompt differently. And then the whole thing changes in front of you. And I've been fascinated with the problem because, you know, I'd love to have Poly AI with a complete product offering that offers everything from full automation to assistive tools, both chat and voice. We do both chat and voice, but we only do end-to-end automation. And the debate around should we be doing assistive tools is as old as the company itself, right?
Yeah.
And what we found to be very interesting is while the same model, the same LLM in the background can generalize and support multiple use cases in end-to-end fulfillment scenarios, that's not the case for an assistive tool, right? If you're quoting me different like insurance things and you're like, hey, with this success payment, you'll pay me $13 a month. And with a much larger excess, you pay me $12 a month. Like that needs to pop up and show all these differences and things. It needs to be like very clear to me very quickly if I'm going to communicate that to you. And to build all that, you can't really go and it's not that easy to create that interface that would then be reusable for all these different things. So the US.
Yeah, with that real time application, without those moments of latency where you have to sit there and mumble until the systems can catch up to the pace of conversation.
Fair.
And I really like this concept that you mentioned about the early days of AI washing. Organizations would say, hey, we staffed up. So it's based on the human resource element, right? It's, oh, we've got the team that can definitely build this. And that's an early premise. We don't have any of the technology, not a whisper, but we've got the team in place. So more to come. I think that's fascinating and an interesting take on, so like, on what's going right, on like, now.
Technology is new. No one's ever built anything functional with it. And then you're sitting there believing that you have it all, right? At least telehealth skepticism. It's great that you're that confident, but come on, be realistic, right? It's not that easy. You just can't be that sure. It's not proven yet.
Okay. So be confident, be clear, be transparent. Don't try and put the cart before the horse. These
but
are ways that you...
Know, in these environments, it's difficult, right? You have to get the buy-in from people. And they have to be a bit extra confident. And then either you're a hero or you're fired. But that's cool. That's what I always really appreciate, especially when you look at like an American versus European context. Always, and not just us, I think every like enterprise software company has found that American companies empower stakeholders to take some risks, make some decisions. Hell, you might not even end up fired if you're transparent and you cap the investment at the right time. In fact, the best people made a lot of mistakes and a few million bucks. Good decisions. And they're like, they end up in C-level roles because they're like visionary leaders rather than people who hedge. I think you should be experimenting liberally. You should be experimenting internally. You should be experimenting with external vendors. And you know what? Funding is sloshing around everywhere. There are a lot of companies doing a lot of work at every level of implementation you might want.
Well, that's a key contributor to this concept of AI washing and gaining predominance is from a funding level. Like it's just, that's where dollars want to go. And so there's a little bit of that trying to capitalize on that market momentum and say, all you have to do is like you were saying earlier about buying C3 AI. You just have the right ticker. And so you just happen to step into it. So now people are basically slapping an AI sticker on whatever they're pitching for to try and secure that funding.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, look, I talk to investors all the time and it's very interesting. I would actually tell you that it's more interesting to speak to investors who have been AI washed because you'll speak to someone who's never invested in a company before. And look, when we started, I was a bit more humble than I am right now. But right now, when I go into a conversation, then someone's like, and how are you going to compete with OpenAI? I'm like, you haven't looked at this space much, have you? Right? Me going and talking about American football, even though all I know is that coach and his tactics matter a lot more than they do for real football. But it's, I'm sorry for it. Thank you. I'm right. It's not called soccer.
Okay.
You know, those that have been investing in it for a while, like they are pretty savvy about these things. Although I think for them as well, this day and age, it's difficult to make the right bets around differentiation.
Yeah, I think that's fair. What about the other side of it, the future of it? There's a very thin line between what could be considered what we're talking about, this like AI washing light, which is just, I don't really know what I'm saying. I don't really know what you expect, but I want to make sure that I'm a part of the AI conversation. And going into things like puffery or bait and switch, which have real world applications and real world fines. So if there's a potential for looking into legislating, I know there's already some active legislation as of mid-2003, was it last year, where something was passed that basically prevented conflicts of interest for finance companies and AI solutions within their infrastructure. So we're starting to trickle into responsible use of and responsible transparency of utilization of things like AI tools. So what do you think is the potential future for trying to regulate this to make sure that it doesn't get to an extent of violating FTC or SEC regulatory requirements?
SEC, I don't know. That's a whole different question. I'm not sure about that one. I think that in terms of using AI and regulating it, it's the Wild West right now. I think the EU is always at the frontier of regulation, if not innovation. So the EU AI Act is probably the most comprehensive piece of legislation with opinions and all sorts of things. I think it really, to regulate it effectively, you have to know where the buck will stop. And that's really difficult right now. For instance, recently you saw the FTC talk about like banning robocalling for like a bunch of new use cases and stuff, because it is getting difficult for people to know whether something's automated or not. It's a debate that we in our product and deployment teams have had for a long time around like whether you should be saying you're automated or not, at least in the first instance. And if you do, how do you say it? It has real repercussions on how people speak to the system, because even if they know that it's AI or not, like then you peel the first layer of the onion. The second one is, well, okay, if I think it's AI, do I think it's going to work? Or do I just start screaming for the Asian? So the first level is ethics / maybe a bit of grandstanding where you're like, you should be honest, transparent, et cetera. So okay, but you should also make it a seamless experience. If you're going to use it, you need to make it functional. So you know how, for example, when you log into a Zoom call, that like recording bit, right? But then I think after some time there, they started adding that this call is being recorded, right? And every time someone new logs in, you hear this call is being recorded, right? To make sure that they haven't missed it. Honestly, that doesn't improve user experience, but ensures that people see that the call is being recorded. That dot, like flashing and telling it's being recorded, you might miss it, but it's there. So I think as we grow with these systems, my hope is that for automated voice, we just have a different dial. And
yeah, you mentioned that.
Then we're just able to basically know, oh, it's automated. Like we teach the general population, this is not an automated experience, but we don't make a fuss with it. We don't need a 10-second warning, because when you hear a 10-second warning, your experience is worse because you wasted 10 seconds.
Yeah. No, it's true. And it makes a lot of sense that when you're saying, if I'm hearing you correctly, that just it, when it comes to regulating against nefarious use of this sort of concept of AI washing, right, that the focus would be on customer, consumer facing applications of the technology or the systems. Like something's going on in the back end, you're using that as part of marketing material, it's teetering on puffery. It's not really the highest priority because it doesn't involve the consumer experience, which that touch point between a business or a brand and their users is probably
other AI systems. This look pretty generative, right? But you've had computer vision systems that ended up like doing rich profiling because of the data they were trained on.
Yes.
Well, this is not a new debate. It's an important debate that like it really depends on the use case. And then the more we make these systems data driven and complicated, the harder it will be to actually regulate their behavior. So you can expect basically have like stringent testing and definitions for like an AI system for a specific task, right? They don't need to define strict benchmarks of works. And I think that's the only way that you get to something like fair in the end. And it's also really hard to regulate whether AI is used or not, because as we tried in the first 10 minutes, like there isn't really a strict definition. It's all just technology.
Yeah. You'd have to basically get your doctorate in order to understand, interpret, and create that sort of legislation.
I don't know how many people can actually
enforce it.
I don't know really, because like I have a PhD in AI, and honestly, like 80% of it became fully obsolete the moment that GPT-3.5 was out. So, like, what do I have to say?
Thanks for your tuition.
I had a scholarship, but. We produce some value on top of it for society, but it's stuff. I think it's the age of an expert in this space. Like the most creative people working with this stuff now are not the academics. In fact, people are increasingly not doing PhDs because all the people you could have done PhDs with are paid multi-million dollar salaries in OpenAI or Google or whatever.
So yeah, they're sitting in the private sector at this stage.
Academic like distinction and titles and everything is worth the least quote. So
cool projection for the future. All right. That's a great point to add on too. Nicola, appreciate your time. Appreciate like being able to tackle the next great like phrase that's in the headlines about AI washing and how to decode it, how to get past it. Can't wait to talk to you next week.
Awesome. Have fun, Orlando.
Thanks. Take care.